T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Yeah, Chicago sports for sure.
Afternoons on the Score.
All right, Bears are not good. They're not fun.
No.
Blackhawks are disgusting.
Oh yeah, that's
not good.
Grim.
Cubs are bad. White Sox left kind of a bad taste in our. Bulls.
Yes.
How about Bulls?
Totally fun.
4-0.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't played a good team yet, but 4-0 is 4-0, and now the fun begins. Like, not, we can evaluate last night or do any big picture thing that you want, but
now the schedule gets interesting.
But now the schedule gets real interesting, and how do they do next 14 games, all against playoff teams, superstar teams, superstars yeah. on every team? Like, this is interesting.
Here
right?
we go, Jim. Here we go, Jim.
Yeah, here we go, Tony.
I think so, right? Both Jim and Tony are
believe,
for this.
Right, Knicks, for anyone who doesn't know,
yeah.
Knicks, Jazz, and Thursday, by the way, if you can get to the United Center,
man,
that is going to be so much fun.
That's Joakim Noah night.
Joakim Noah night with Derrick Rose, Taj Gibson, and Tibbs in the building for the other team.
So cool.
Yeah, that's going to be great. Then Jazz, Celtics, Sixers, Nets, Mavericks, Warriors, Lakers, or Warriors, Clippers, Lakers.
That West Coast three
Blazers
stretch.
Nuggets, Knicks, Pacers. No, it's a five.
All of it.
It's a five game West Coast trip.
Oh man!
From Golden State, LA, Portland, Denver. So that's. I mean,
those are all really good teams.
Yeah, I mean, you get everybody. You get the best players in the league. Like you, I think you'll play like the entirety of first team All NBA in that trip. Right? You play Luka. You play Durant. You play Embiid. You play Steph Curry.
You play Dame.
You play Dame.
Jokic.
You play LeBron. Right. Last year's MVP. Jokic. Kawhi. Like LeBron. Obviously.
Paul named George. LeBron.
Yeah. Julius Randle. Sabonis. Donovan Mitchell. Tatum. Brown.
Good.
Yeah.
It's a run. Absolutely. And it's fun. It's awesome to be able to go next level this early with our Bulls analysis and criticism. To watch them last night get their first legit test when Toronto, even without Siakam, starts going super hard in the back half of the fourth quarter with massive defensive pressure. And let's face it, a championship point guard in Fred VanVleet, who has developed into that.
Yeah.
Helming the pressure and then the offense and moving guys around and getting them in the spot. And DeMar DeRozan had to be the closer, had to step up and be the closer. And we could talk about like whether he's going to close as a scorer over Zach. And there'll be times when that kind of toggles back and forth. But I was more fascinated by the overall chaos of every ball handler last night.
Yeah.
As the pressure got turned up, man, Vooch was taking extra steps. Lonzo Ball was making terrible inbounds passes.
A laughably bad inbounds pass when they were up four late. That was bad.
And he was giving up the handle. He was like, yeah, you take it a couple of times. Caruso looked shaky. Everybody, and LaVine, to his credit, said it right away in the postgame. And you know they talked about it postgame. Who is going to be the steadying force as not just a scorer, because DeRozan can clearly do that. He's closed games before, but the steadying force as like a ball handler, breaker of pressure, on-court decision maker in the full court. Like, how are they going to do that? they got work to do, man, because everybody was jittery last night as they almost gave that thing
up.
Yeah,
they don't have like a pure, I mean, forget a Kyrie or a Steph or a Dame, like an elite all-time ball handler. They don't really have that guy.
Right.
Right? That's not Zach's primary role. It's not DeRozan's. It's Lonzo's better off ball.
Yes.
Caruso is capable, but he's much better at other things. Like, you wouldn't call him that.
Right. Caruso closed a lot of games in the 21 playoff games that he had with LeBron.
Yeah.
2 years ago, but I don't think he was the ball handler.
No. I think LeBron is the guy who normally has the ball in his hands at the end of the game.
Yeah. And sometimes LeBron will bring it up and he'll cross midcourt with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So that's the thing about Lonzo. Like, we talked about Lonzo, and I have these dreams for Lonzo as like a Rajon Rondo style floor general, distributing and deciding who gets what, and like really, and I love his court vision. I love so much about his game, but he's not that dude with the handle. He's just not. And that was a knock on him scouting coming out, was loose handles. And I'm sure he's worked on it, like he's worked on everything in his game, but that's not, so he's not that guy. So when they would cross half court last night, they got it to DeRozan, and DeRozan would back his man down or take him off the dribble, create a mid-range opportunity, and nail it. He was money. Do you give DeMar DeRozan the ball on your side of the half court and let him dribble and let him cross?
I think, yeah.
Maybe.
I think that's certainly in play. I think, you know, pressure and press in the NBA is not – these guys are so good, right? It's not often a thing – like that is going to disrupt an NBA team. They were real shaky last night. I thought Billy Donovan said something interesting the game before last, where he talked about how offense is actually slower to come than defense when you've got a bunch of new pieces,
because mm-hmm.
guys just have to get comfortable. And like, DeRozan's used to being the man, and Levine's used to being the man, and Vooch's used to being the man, and now they got to play together, and you got to integrate Lonzo and all of those things. So I think that like offensive flow and continuity will come, and I think back to like college basketball, like where sometimes
it's not like you face 40 minutes of hell.
Right.
This is not Nolan Richardson or Mike Anderson's Arkansas
Razorbacks. Rick Pitino's press, right. And like one team's way more athletic than the other. So like they were super shaky last night. I'm not convinced that will be the norm, but it is true they don't have a pure ball handler and the one guy that it will happen to all the time. So I think it will sometimes be hot hand, who's playing well in the moment, what lineup had success in the second half that they maybe go back to for confidence and stabilizing force. Like, which, by the way, like my prevailing thought out of last night's game is it was very simple. Last year's team doesn't win last night's game. They just don't. Like, they're, if your main guy last year, Levine, wasn't completely locked in, there wasn't a secondary thing.
Now there is.
That's to me, that was the story of last night's game.
Massive.
They're better than that Toronto team without Siakam. But on the road, it still is a coin flip game, right? They were like
they're 1.5-point favorite.
Yeah, that's a coin flip spot.
And by the way, you're welcome for the DeMar DeRozan over, all of you, at 20.5 points, narrative based.
I think Shane hit at least one leg of his 6-leg parlay. Yeah, I think at least one, right, Shane? So 0-5 and 6 against.
Yeah, so I hit DeMar DeRozan's over on the points.
Nice.
And then I missed the other 4 legs.
Okay.
So sometimes you have to understand that when we talk about parlays on the show, in the moment, they are parlocks, but things can change.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Circumstances change. That makes sense.
Right. If something in the parlay, or the parlock, I'm sorry, doesn't hit, goes back to being a parlay, and then you can't predict that.
Yeah, it became a parlay, and you lost.
Right. Yeah. But I was really close on all the other four.
You were as close as I was when I almost had the Ravens.
4 points
and they lost
away from Patrick Williams.
Yeah.
2 points away from
Zach
Levine.
So he was halfway there.
Yeah, halfway there. 2 points away from Zach Levine, 1-3 away from Levine, and like 3 rebounds away from Lonzo Ball. So it could have happened in a different circumstance. I needed overtime.
If the game had gone completely differently,
then it
might have happened.
I think the Bulls lose last night's game to a fully healthy Raptors team or a better team this year. But I think in the exact same circumstance, last year's Bulls team loses that game last night.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
For
DeRozan was the difference.
DeRozan was absolutely the difference. And his His calm and his cold-blooded, steady hand.
And the mid-range, man. For those of you who missed the mid-range, DeMar DeRozan should be very aesthetically pleasing for you.
Man, that dude can get a turnaround jumper against anybody, and it is silky smooth.
Yeah.
And he was doing it. And just the calm, it's massive because... And I was looking at the playoff experience. Vooch was in one series each of the last 2 years. Orlando won one game in each of those series. That is the extent of his playoff experience, even though he's a man in his 30s. Lonzo's never been in a playoff game.
Yeah, LaVine, obviously.
Zach has obviously never been in a playoff game. Caruso was in those 21, but he was not a closing scorer at all. It's like... DeRozan's going to have a big role. And so in the side note, I'm going to make some money betting DeMar DeRozan overs in certain games where he's going to be called upon to be the closer.
We are both massive fans of our next guest. We're going to break a little early so we have maximum time with him. The Big Short, Vice, Step Brothers, Anchorman, one of the most interesting careers in all of Hollywood. But in many ways, it started in Chicago as a Chicago improv legend. Adam McKay next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
We are expecting Adam McKay to call us any minute. We've been in touch with him and his people as of minutes ago, so we're confident that it will happen. Super excited. I've heard him do a few long-form interviews, and he's just interesting and fascinating, and I don't know of anyone going currently that has a more interesting IMDb page.
I think that's probably true, and we could probably just do 20 minutes of straight NBA with him if we wanted to, but I think we want to do more than that.
I'd like to do a little bit more than that. Adam McKay on The Score.
I'm talking to Adam McKay.
And I moved to Chicago and did Second City.
You then got a job at SNL.
I did 1 year as staff writer, and then the next year I got promoted to head writer. I made short films. I got to learn how to make movies.
I'm Billy. My friends call me Goat. And I run Stephen Hagen's pawn shop here in Brooklyn. We're the only pawn shop in all 5 boroughs that specializes in the buying, trading of food.
Now, so you met Will Ferrell at SNL.
We wrote Anchorman together.
You stay classy, San Diego.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Damn it! Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter? For the last time, anything you put on that prompter, Burgundy will read.
Shooting our next movie, Talladega Nights.
Yeah, you sound like a dog with peanut butter on the roof of your mouth.
I am French.
You say French?
Oui.
Oui? No, we are not French. We're American.
And then we went into Step Brothers.
Love it, love it, scoop it, I gotta dig it. I don't know. I didn't want to sing too loud. I don't want to wake up Robert and Nancy. My throat's sore. I've had a sore throat for a month and a half. And this is not an acoustic environment that's suitable to request this from me.
You gotta know, I'm not just some guy. Brennan, that is the voice of an angel.
Your voice is like a combination of Fergie and Jesus.
The key mystery of the last 30 years of America is, does Dick Cheney at night, when the lights are off, have 1 second of realizing what he is?
By all accounts of what people saw in that room on that terrible day, there was confusion, fear, uncertainty. Dick Cheney saw something else that no one else did. He saw an opportunity.
Best adapted screenplay. Charles Randolph and Adam McKay for The Big Short.
Wall Street loves to use confusing terms to make you think only they can do what they do. Or even better, for you just to leave them the f*** alone. So here's Margot Robbie in a bubble bath to explain.
And the Oscar goes to Charles Randolph and Adam McKay, The Big Short.
Thank you so much to the Academy.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on The Score.
It is our honor on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. We're huge fans. Adam McKay with us on the Score. Adam, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on. That is quite the montage. That was impressive.
You know, when we have a big guest, our sound man, who's the best in the business, Chris Tannehill, goes all out, and he always upstages us because the guest then just compliments the production and never the questions, Adam. That's what happens.
That was legitimately impressive. It made me for a second start to think I was a little bit of a big deal. And then I remembered who I actually am, and that dissipated.
Well, we'll try and build you back up at this point. I want to take you to June 1994, Adam. I was working on a thing in Wisconsin, a sketch show thing, and the funniest guy in our cast was Brian Stack, right? Improv legend, eventual Conan writer, character actor. And every story he told that week when we were filming this thing was, well, Adam McKay said this, or Adam McKay has this bit. And eventually it was like, shut up about Adam McKay. Who's this guy? It was 1994. But now we know why. Would you share with our Chicago listeners who else was in that particular moment, that incubator of comedy with you around then? Because from the outside, it was pretty damn daunting. So tell people who else was there with you.
It was crazy. I moved there in 1990 to Chicago, had a crappy little apartment up on Wolcott and Division, I'm sure before it was gentrified. And that was before the internet. So if you wanted to do comedy, if you wanted to do sketch comedy, improvisation, you had to go to Chicago. That was the town. And it still is. It's the mecca of sketch comedy. So there was this flood of people that were coming in. You had like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Chris Farley had just gotten hired at SNL, and Tim Meadows, Dave Koechner, Mike Myers had just gotten hired at SNL. Brian Stack went on to be a writer for Conan and for Colbert now. And Kevin Dorff was a writer for Conan. I mean, I could literally, John Glazer did the show Delocated. We had Scott Adsit in my Second City cast, who was on 30 Rock. Rachel Dratch, SNL, Horatio Sanz, SNL. Literally, I have to stop because I could name another 25 people. And, you know, Chicago has this amazing theater scene as well. There's incredible dramatic theater there. And it was just this insanely fertile time where we started the Upright Citizens Brigade. We were studying with Del Close. We got to do Second City. It was amazing, man. That town, there's nowhere like it as far as live theater. I've never been to another place like Chicago.
It's so cool to hear you talk about our city that way, because we kind of now have the impression that it's, you know, New York for stand-up comedy, L.A. for Hollywood. But we've talked to some of those people that you mentioned, and they all speak about the city with great reverence. What do you think it was? Is it just the competitiveness, the location? What was it about Chicago that had that influence?
You know, I think your city, Chicago has a great working class history. You know, it's a really strong union town going way back to like the Studs Terkel days. And there's just this real history of like strong working class, middle class, you know, educated people, cultured people, but no pretension. And what I noticed in Chicago is just like you'd see theaters like next to, you know, like in a little storefront, and on the corner there'd be a bar with a, you know, old style sign on it, and you just see people doing like Shakespeare in like 30 seat theaters that were like freezing cold. And it's just got this great kind of like do it yourself attitude. And yeah, there's nothing like it. The theater scene in New York, you got to have a load of money. You got to already be established to even get reviewed. In Chicago, we did like the first Upright Citizens Brigade show in this crappy little coffee house on Division. And we got reviewed in the Reader. We got reviewed in the other magazine. It was called, I think, The New City. I don't know if that's still around. And then eventually we got with the Upright Citizens Brigade, just a bunch of yahoos doing our own homemade kind of theater. We got reviewed in like the Tribune and the Sun-Times. Like, it was crazy. And critics would come out and they would see these little handmade shows. But I think it's that history. I think it's that like union kind of history, solid kind of working town and just not pretentious. Like, people will show up. I also think it helps that it's freezing cold and you've got to do things inside too. I think that helps the theater scene.
You know, everything you said about the theater scene is also true of the music scene. This is a great place and always has been a great place to play and just have people come on a Wednesday night or a Thursday night. So as you're doing Pinata Full of Bees in 94, which is like this legendary sketch comedy review, that you were part of at Second City. Are you also sneaking out and going to Michael Jordan Bulls games at the United Center? This is what we like to picture is you and all those cohorts you were talking about sneaking out for playoff games every once in a while.
Yeah, I did see some games, but you know what? Mostly we did because we were fairly broke. Because remember, we're doing theater improvisation. So we don't have a lot of like excess fun money going on. We're barely paying our rents. But what we used to do was the high school basketball scene in Chicago, as you know, is incredible, the public league.
Yep.
So we would go watch games. We would put on suit jackets. I had one suit jacket to my name, and we'd bring an old clipboard so we could go to the South Side and you know, little dangerous over there back then in the 90s. And we would go watch Kevin Garnett play when he was at
Farragut.
With Ronnie Fields, and we would go watch their games, and we would sit in the crowd like we were scouts. So people were really nice to us. And we got to see that legendary team. I think Michael Wright was the power forward, Ronnie Fields at the three, and of course, Kevin Garnett, the big ticket, at the five. And we saw them play in the city championship. Oh man, who was the team they played? There was a guard named Lee Irvin who could light it up. And I'm trying to remember what team he was on, but the public league high school basketball was so good that we went and watched that every chance we had. So those are my best basketball memories of Chicago.
That's awesome.
And I re-listened to the Benji Wilson episode today, Death at the Wing, a podcast that you host and executive produce, which was fantastic. And I was struck by the personal detail and just the context and the nuance in that episode. So, like, I was like, oh, I wonder if Adam McKay has a tie into Chicago high school basketball. And there it was. But that project, Adam, I found so fascinating. And I'm just curious, like, of all of the vehicles, it did seem like it lent itself perfectly to a podcast. And was that a deliberate choice on your end?
Yeah, what was cool about it, for those people that don't know what it's about, basically, it was just an observation I had like 10 years ago, which is, why did so many players, rising stars in basketball, die in the 80s and early 90s? It's a breathtaking amount when you total them all up. And then it stops. You don't see as many players die after that, thank God. And it's this pretty long list, about 12, 14 different rising stars or established stars in the NBA who died through a myriad of reasons. So what was great was we went into it with this great producer, Jody Avergan, who's an excellent podcast producer. And what's cool about podcasts is you can have the question intact when you're doing them. Whereas if I did it as a documentary or a show, I got to get the money. You got to kind of have it answered. So we went into it not really knowing what the answer was to why all these young, talented stars had passed away. And one of them, who's a Chicago Hoops legend, is Benji Wilson, who was the number one high school player in the year, his senior year, and was tragically gunned down in an altercation on a city street. And we also looked at Len Bias, of course, one of the more famous deaths from that period, Drazen Petrovic. We looked at, there were so many names, Ricky Berry, who's a player a lot of people have forgotten about, who tragically took his own life. And we were able to thread the story through the giant change that was going on in the 1980s politically, as the whole country started swinging more to the right and as services were being cut for cities and for communities in need. And not saying that directly caused the deaths, but what it did was it harmonized with the stories, and we were able to tell both stories at the same time. But the Benji Wilson episode is one of the really special episodes where we were able to talk with the young man who actually pulled the trigger in that altercation and the story of what happened with him and the Wilson family in the end of that episode is one of the most incredible and beautiful things I've ever heard. So, yeah, that particular episode was really, really moving.
So it's such an opportunity to enter it with the question. And what do you think you learned, during the process?
I mean, what we learned was a couple things. I mean, it's really fascinating for those people that don't know. You know, the NBA was not a popular league in the 70s. And so you saw with the launching of the first satellites that created cable TV, the NBA really started blowing up and a tremendous amount of money started flooding into the lives of these players. At the same time, while this huge party culture, the disco scene was hitting with a lot of cocaine flowing through it. And while at the same time, you have a whole new type of government through Reagan coming up where they're like, hey, do it on your own. Pull yourselves up by your bootstraps. By the way, if you like that, you're happy about it. If you don't, you're not. But it's just the reality of what was going on. And so you saw services cut for mental illness. You saw services cut for poor communities. Services cut for hospitals that would take care of people in need. And so through this kind of rising era of stardom and parties and cocaine, while these communities of color are having their services cut, you saw sort of this collision happen. And a lot of young, talented players died. There's kind of no era like it really in any sport that I've been able to find. The closest you can find is the CTE syndrome that happened in the NFL and the sort of cover up around that. So, yeah, it's an incredible series. A lot of people tell me, oh, I don't care about politics, but I loved it. And then some people will tell me, I don't care about basketball, but I loved it. So it's all the episodes are done. It's available everywhere. Podcasts are available. It's definitely worth a listen.
It's a fantastic podcast series. Death at the Wing is the name. Adam McKay is our guest, and that's a recent project for you. So we kind of started with the Chicago stuff and then jumped to the end. Does anything about your own career surprise you? Because we were talking about it before the show. You have to have one of the most interesting IMDb pages of anyone going. And I'm just wondering, has there been anything that you've done where you're like, damn, I can't believe they let me do that?
The funniest moment, my wife and I always laugh about it, was the night after the Academy Awards. We woke up in bed and I just turned to her and I was like, you know, because we won for best adapted screenplay. So there's an Academy Award in our bedroom. And I just turned to my wife and I was like, how the F did that happen?
Yeah.
We both just started laughing. We're like, what the hell? Yeah, it's been crazy. I mean, it's, you know, I was a guy, when I got to Chicago, I was doing improv. I was teaching improv. I was working at Second City at the Improv Olympic. And I was happy. I was like, this is good, man. If this is the next, 40, 50 years, I'm in heaven. I love this town. I love the theater scene. I can do this. So, yeah, every little step, every change has just been surprising and most of all, fun as hell and exciting. But I always tell people, they're like, boy, you got a little more dramatic with the stuff that you're doing lately. And I was like, well, no, I didn't get more dramatic. The world got crazier. So it's, at a certain point, I would love to just keep making movies like Step Brothers for the rest of my life. But with the world being just the giant wood chipper full of circus peanuts that it is right now, it's like kind of hard to keep doing those movies. When the world got crazier than Step Brothers, I knew I had to adjust.
Yeah, and I've heard you in multiple interviews talk about that, and it's totally relatable and fascinating, and I love the work that you've done. We both do in that way. But I was still thinking, like, okay, it makes sense, right? The improv star, comedy, head writer, SNL, you get to meet these people, meet Will Ferrell, do all this comedy stuff, have all of these big hits. And then The Big Short happens, and, like, Christian Bale he's maybe the best, right? How do you go from being Will Ferrell's guy to, like, Christian Bale does one movie seemingly every few years, and now you're getting him Academy Award nominations? Like, was that, like, him validating you in any way? There has to be a story of that relationship coming together, and then you guys become creative partners.
Yeah, that was just such a man. Like I hate to use the word blessing, but I think that's the right word. Where you're like, how did this happen? You know, he's an unusual guy in that he just isn't into the Star Trip at all. So all he goes off of is he reads the script and then he meets with the director. So he kind of didn't care that I was the guy who had done Talladega Nights and, you know, numerous ridiculous sketches at SNL. He just liked the script. I talked to him about what I was going to do, and he's like, I'm in. Huh. And then he did the same thing with Vice. He read the script. I went over to his house. We talked for like 4 hours, and he's like, let's do it. And he's just one of the least pretentious guys you will ever meet in your life. He's really, it's crazy because you think of him as this giant movie star, one of the great actors of our generation, but he's just completely down to earth, you know, has to do the press stuff because you kind of have to do it, but would rather not do it and just loves to act. And I think a lot of people, because that video of him from like, what was that, like 10 years ago, 8 years ago, where he kind of got angry at a DP.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, that one.
That one.
Yeah,
that one.
Yeah, they think he's like this intense, crazy guy, but he's just not. He's like the most laid back, funny guy you're ever going to meet. And that was literally a DP stepped right in front of his face while he was trying to act in a scene. And I think it short circuited him. But he's the most laid back, great guy you'll ever meet. So, and then what you start to learn is a lot of these actors are just like that. They just love to act. Like you think of DiCaprio, oh, he's this giant movie star. No, he just wants good scripts and wants to do good stuff. And the rest of the stuff is kind of what comes with it. And over again, I keep meeting these great actors and you realize, oh, that's why they're great actors, because they're about the acting. And like Meryl Streep, same thing, like just big, giant, generous laugh and loves to do cool, interesting stuff. And, you know, all the fame and the legend and the kind of glitter around them isn't remotely who they are. Brad Pitt was like that too. Just a guy from Oklahoma, funny as hell, laid back. And you're like, every now and then you're like, it's Brad Pitt. But you're like, no, he's just a guy.
Yeah,
like,
just human beings. Just human beings you're dealing with on the daily. Well, our Meryl Streep stories are very different, don't you think, Danny?
Obviously. Like,
our interactions. Adam McKay, in our business, in like talk radio and sports radio, Anchorman is like Caddyshack for the next generation. Like when I was growing up as a producer, it was like all the shows had drops of, well, we're waiting, and all the Caddyshack lines, right? Do you realize that's Anchorman now? Like we don't even have to play the stuff. We can just say 60% of the time, or discovered by the Germans, or an old wooden ship, or whatever. Like it's just, it is part of the vernacular of this business. And I'm wondering if you realize that, because I always remember Bill Murray doing that bit on SNL, the quotable Caddyshack. And you were there at the time, weren't you? Do you remember that bit at all? Because you could do the quotable Anchorman now.
I do. Tina Fey wrote that bit, actually. I remember she was up at 2 a.m. working on that. Well, the cool thing about hearing you say that, and it is really enjoyable to hear it quoted all over the place. Like, it's shocking how much it pops up in, like, articles, or you'll hear it during a sporting event. But Farrell and I, when we made the movie, we were both saying to each other, what happened to those kind of great ensemble comedies like Caddyshack, like Stripes, like Animal House, where they would have like 15 or like 8 really funny people in it? Because at that time, all the comedies that were coming out in the 90s tended to be like single funny person. It was like Jim Carrey, who's brilliant, but it was like one funny person. Or it was like Dana Carvey had a movie, it was like one funny guy, or Mike Myers. And so when Farrell and I did Anchorman, we're like, let's do a movie where, you know, like the read option, you don't know where the ball's going to go. You don't know who's going to be funny in any kind of scene. So that was the entire intention of the movie, was let's make a movie that's in the spirit of that, because that's how Farrell and I grew up on the movies you're talking about, like Caddyshack.
Well, that's what it has become, is for this generation. It totally has. Well, look, we've been dying to have you on because we know what a sports guy you are, and you need a Chicago show of record for sports thoughts. Like, the Bulls are awesome. They're 4-0. We spent a good 20 minutes dissecting why DeMar DeRozan is such a great closer to have as they develop their offense together and the defense clicks first.
So tell me it's real, Adam.
Yeah.
Are the Bulls real?
It is. I got to give myself a little credit because all my friends were like, it's preseason. Who cares that they're winning? I'm like, I'm telling you, they got players now. Like, that's no joke. That's a team that there's no reason they shouldn't win at least 44, 45 games.
Yep.
Like, there's just no reason. And by the way, am I mistaken? Or do you guys not even have Coby White playing for you yet? Is
Correct.
He getting hurt?
Yeah, he's still recovering now, from a shoulder injury.
Let's not downplay Coby White. That guy's a flamethrower. You get that guy coming off your bench. And even, you know, he's not consistent enough yet. But that guy can drop 28 points in the blink of an eye. And now suddenly you've got him back eventually. And you've got that sort of Vinnie Johnson microwave type guy off the bench. Now, that team's without a doubt for real. I mean, the only thing that worries me, and I'm sure it worries you guys, is the defense. Because not a lot of those guys are known for D'ing up, but you do have Patrick Williams, right? The second year player that you have, that he can D up. So maybe the defense is going to be a little better. Vuk has been a little better defensively than I remember him when he was in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are definitely for real. There's no way. It's always barring injury, of course. Barring injury, there's no way that team doesn't win 45 games, 44 games. There's no way you're not at least like a 5 seed. Now, could you do even more than that? You certainly could, because the NBA is weird right now. Like, a lot of players are getting old, you know, injuries. You still got COVID floating around. I mean, how cool would it be to see you guys win like 52 and get to the Eastern Conference Finals? I think it's not crazy.
Oh, dare to dream. You just entered my dreams, Adam McKay.
Absolutely. So look, anytime you've got a Chicago sports thought, you need to get off. You know, we're your guys, all right?
That's not self-serving at all.
No. It's had nothing to do with us.
Nothing
really.
At all.
And we've established the career stuff and all that. We don't have to do any of that if you don't want to. You can just call up and talk sports at your leisure.
I will talk hoops any day of the week. That is I got my league pass. I'm a junkie. I watch every team play. And I got to tell you right now, the Bulls, there's an argument to be made. Am I crazy? Funnest team in the league right now?
We feel it. We totally feel it. That's exciting. Warriors with Steph now that they're resurgent.
I've seen it before.
Yeah.
Old news.
Yeah, this is new.
The Bulls are the hot thing. Adam McKay said so.
I'm rooting for him. I want to see the 50. I want to see you guys hit the 50 win mark. That would be incredible. You know, the Knicks are kind of living a fantasy right now, so we'll see if they can keep going where they're going. But I think you guys got more for real guns than the Knicks have. I think you got real shooters, real vets. And I think you're right about DeRozan. Guys, you know, ice water in his vein. He's been there, done that. You got a fourth quarter closer. And Levine's come of age, too. I think Levine's going to start knocking on like third team All-NBA this season.
Adam McKay, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. I guess the last thing, don't look up. You mentioned Leonardo DiCaprio casually and all those names that you were mentioning. This movie is a comedy about the end of the world, I would imagine. Is comedy like the defense mechanism to allow, like, hey, I want to talk about these serious things, so I need to make people laugh in order to maybe change a few minds? Or how does this subject matter become a comedy?
You know, honestly, part of it was I needed to laugh. I think the world got so, you know, swirlish and insane that I was like, especially after Vice, which is probably the darkest movie I've done. I was like, okay, I need to laugh a little bit. But you are right. It's still a comedy about the end of the world. And it's a wild movie. I mean, it's the early screenings we've gotten on it are really interesting. But it's got a ton of huge laughs. It's got a lot of other feelings in it as well. And it is definitely like nothing I've ever been involved in making before. And it's got this crazy cast with Jen Lawrence and Jonah Hill, who's screamingly funny in the movie, and Meryl Streep, who's hilarious, and Rob Morgan, Tyler Perry, Cate Blanchett, Timothy Chalamet. It's one of the most ridiculous casts we've ever put together. It's sort of sort of like a cross between It's a Mad, 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 Mad World and Dr. Strangelove. I think that's kind of how you would describe it. Yeah, it's great. It's a crazy one.
Well, just no fighting in the war room, please. And we see you, McKay. We see you trying to change the world through basketball and through comedy. So keep going. We enjoy it.
I love it. Thanks for having me on, gents. It was a pleasure.
Adam, thank you so much. It was a thrill for us. That's Adam McKay with us on Parkins and Spiegel on The Score. Could literally talk to that guy for hours.
Oh, my God. There's so much. I mean, he's the dude. He's the writer and the director of Anchorman. He's the guy sitting there next to the camera just shouting out lines to people.
Right.
I love Lamp. You know, so like he's the guy shouting out the funny stuff. Because just like the dude told me in 94, he was funnier than everybody in the room full of funny people.
Just incredible. Thank you for helping set that up and coordinating it. He is one of my absolute favorites. So that was a real, real thrill. Another one of my favorites, Joe Ostrowski, next on The Score.
Joseph, come on!
This guy is a machine. All he does is work out and pick winners.
Joe Ostrowski.
We couldn't live without Joe Ostrowski.
That being said, I hate Joe Ostrowski.
So, is that Ostrowski?
A friend of mine is very smart, said I've been very lucky with gambling. I've never won.
Joe Ostrowski with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Bottom of the hour was brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Our conversations with Joe O are brought to you by PointsBet. He's the host of BetQL Daily. Joe, I promise you it is not personal. I feel like the last couple of weeks we've gone long in that middle segment, but forgive us. Adam McKay was just too incredible to talk to.
Oh, no apology necessary. That was awesome. I enjoyed listening to that for damn sure.
The books, I had been making money, but this week I got absolutely crushed. So I was with the books this week. What is going on here with this three-week stretch in the NFL?
Yeah, it was my worst week of the entire year.
Might as well.
Get out the collection plate, right? Because you're going to hear some bookmakers crying. Three straight weeks now, Danny, the public has crushed the books. The president at Station Casinos in Las Vegas said, "I don't recall 3 weeks quite like this in my 25 years in the business." PointsBet says they haven't suffered three consecutive losing Sundays in the NFL since they launched in the U.S. back in 2019. So what's happening is, well, now we finally got a bunch of home teams that won this past week. 9-4 straight up, 9-4 against the spread. The favorites and the underdogs both went 6-6. But the key is the big favorites are covering the number. We had five games, touchdown favorites or more. They went 4-1 against the spread. So the popular favorites are covering. That means the money line parlays are coming in with a bunch of favorites. That means the teasers are hitting. Guys, we have not had an upset this season of an underdog of more than a touchdown. That's happened once with 7 weeks into the season. That has happened one other time in the Super Bowl era.
That's why everyone's still alive in Survivor.
Yes, it's annoying.
It really is.
That is amazing. Today, Joe, you might have heard, is the first game of the World Series. What angles interest you other than straight up series outcome? What are some fun stuff that people can play on this thing?
I really want the Braves to win, but as I dig more into this, speaks, I'm like, I'm not sure that they can. Today, with what I find interesting about the Valdez matchup is all of a sudden he's the guy that might go three times in the series. I mean, that's how good he has looked. Specifically in today's matchup, it's like you look at him, sinker ball pitcher. Atlanta has been bad against sinkers, but hopefully Morton can have a good performance. I bet the under 8.5 as far as tonight. You can bet on the number of games played. You can bet on the series score at the very end. I'm considering Braves in 7, but since I think the Astros are going to win tonight, maybe I'm going to hold off on that. Get better odds. World Series MVP, that's always fun. And if you want to play the former Cubs angle, you can get some pretty good odds there. Soler, I believe he's hitting leadoff. That just came out today. And we'll see if he's going to play the games in the NL parks. But I think they're going to find a way, as long as he can have a pretty good start. He's 33-1. Jocktober's playing tonight, Speaks. He's in the 8-hole. I thought he wasn't going to be in the lineup. So now I'm considering him with the run that he's been on at 33-1. And so basically I'm talking about Braves here because all the favorites for the World Series MVP, they're all Astros at the top. So Ozzie Albies, you can find him at 20-1. He could certainly turn it on for finally.
Joe, the Bulls, we talked about how public of a team they were preseason. All they've done is win four games and cover four spreads. I cannot imagine what that's doing to their long-term odds.
Can we get a narrative every night so we can just keep betting it? DeRozan props go nuts. Friday night, people are tweeting me screenshots of their Lonzo props. I'm like, oh, that made sense. I bet Lonzo props. What I didn't do is a triple-double.
Yeah.
75-1, guys.
Oh, man.
There are a bunch of Bulls fans that bet the Lonzo triple-double on Friday for 75-1. 1 week ago, we were laughing at the fact that the Bulls were minus 180 to make the playoffs. Bet 180 to win 100. Right now, they're minus 300.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, wait, there's more. 30-1 to win the East last week. 20-1 right now. 70-1 to win the title last week. 50-1 right now.
Well, there, but the make the playoffs bet are after the play-in tournament. That's ridiculous.
Correct.
So they could still be the seventh seed in the regular season and then lose two individual games and miss the playoffs. Yeah, if you're laying 3-1 right now on make the playoffs, that is a bad use of market analysis. You're just too late. Right?
It's okay. Like, look at the schedule. Just because if they go 500 in the next few weeks doesn't mean they're bad, but you'll get a better number.
Yeah, there you go. Speaks is laughing at me. What are you laughing at?
We're done. We're out of time except for this thought.
Yeah, my bad. All right, yeah, sorry. We are late. I don't want to be late to Hub.
I know, but Joe's got stuff, and he's got stuff.
It's unbelievable. Joe. Let
me throw one thing at you.
Please.
Okay? Like, it's not funny Matt Nagy tested positive, right? That's not funny.
No.
I will say this.
Way to kill the fun, man.
I'll say this, though. This might make you laugh. The line was 3.5 before that announcement. The line moved to 3.
Stop.
So the betting market is telling us that the Bears are a half point better with special teams coordinator Chris Tabor as their head coach.
That is not what it's telling us.
That's what I'm saying.
They're saying with Bill Lazor unencumbered on the headset. That's what they're saying.
Joe Ostrowski, BetQL Daily on behalf of PointsBet. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys.
That is the Joe O was also just featured in Chicago Magazine.
That was a great feature and very cool to see you in there, Joe. Good stuff.
Hub Arkish. You want fun? He enjoys the fun.
It's the go-to
of these conversations. Next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.